Good evening, everyone. I'm Lenore Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Get this. This week marks World Immunization and African Vaccination Week. In a major vaccine breakthrough, the World Health Organization says Malawi has become the first country to begin immunizing children against malaria using the only licensed vaccine to protect against the mosquito spread disease. The vaccine known as Mosquirix was developed by GlaxoSmithKline and is said to protect about one-third of children who are immunized. April 25th is World Malaria Day. The World Health Organization says in 2017, 219 million people were infected with malaria worldwide, and about 435,000 of them died from the mosquito-borne disease, the majority of them children under 5 in sub-Saharan Africa. We will discuss malaria on the program today, and joining us via phone from Atlanta, Georgia, is Dr. Michelle Chong. She is director of Malaria Zero and a medical epidemiologist for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. Dr. Chong, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
It's great to have you on the show. Also joining us via phone from Washington, D.C. is Margaret Raleigh McDonald, the executive director of the United Nations Foundation's Nothing But Nets campaign. Mrs. McDonald, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. So first and foremost, let me have your reaction, Dr. Chong, on this vaccine that is being rolled out. What is this vaccine about? We've been waiting for so many years for a vaccine to protect against malaria. So what can you tell us?
So it's a very exciting news, especially for the children in Africa, and as you've already mentioned, suffer the most from the malaria epidemic. So just a few words about the vaccine. As you alluded to, the vaccine has been in development and trials, both for its effectiveness as well as its safety, over the past 3 decades or so. And the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was part of one of these safety and efficacy trials in Kenya. So that's really exciting for us in particular, to be part of it and to be seeing this rolled out. So the thing about the vaccine, and it's targeted towards the young population, kids of up to 2 years of age will be eligible for this. And one very important thing to remember is that this vaccine provides partial immunity. So, you know, I know that folks are very familiar with childhood vaccines that has a higher rate of percentage of immunity that it imparts. This is slightly different in that it provides partial immunity, although in the areas where it's going to be rolled out, that's still an important contributor to helping to prevent the numbers of infections, the number of episodes that a child has, and the severity of those infections. Uh-huh. So because these areas are so highly endemic, meaning a child can have 2-3 episodes of malaria in just 1 year. So that's to say that the partial immunity helps protect the child, but you still need to use bed nets. The other, testing and treating for malaria for these young kids still needs to happen. But this will be added protection that can really help prevent disease.
And partial immunity, and we'll talk more about that, because 30% is really something, as you mentioned, that we want to understand. So one of the tools that you mentioned is bed nets, and this brings me to you, Ms. McDonald. Bed nets is one tool that has been really encouraged and supported by your campaign. Talk to us about, first of all, your reaction with regards to this vaccine, given that you are really advocating prevention measures.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And like Dr. Michelle Chang said, this vaccine is certainly a really exciting development. Yet there is still need for other preventative tools like insecticide-treated bed nets. And so us at the United Nations Foundation's Nothing But Nets campaign, we're proud to have played a role. So essentially, we've had about 10 or 15 years ago, only, I believe, 5% of families had access to an insecticide-treated bed net. And that number has surpassed the 50% mark. I believe WHO has reported it's about 54% over the last year or two. So there's been an incredible scale-up of access to insecticide-treated bed nets that do, you know, a spectacular job at preventing the transmission of the disease. That said, there's still a lot of work to be done, a lot of people who are not yet don't yet have access to these tools. So we're really proud of the role we've played. We've helped to provide over 13 million bed nets to protect the most vulnerable people, children under five, pregnant women, families living as refugees or have been internally displaced. And we've worked in, you know, more than 30 countries. And yet, you know, we're a relatively small player in that, you know, programs like the President's Malaria Initiative and the Global Fund really carry the lion's share of that work, working in close conjunction with endemic countries' governments and ministries of health. Okay. So it's a really exciting time in the fight against malaria. Over 7 million lives have been saved over the last 15 or so years. And a lot of that, you know, WHO estimates that about 68% of that progress can be attributed to the scale-up of access to insecticide-treated bed nets. So really proud of the role that we've played in ushering that progress forward.
So Dr. Chang, would you say that a lot of progress has been made as of today with regards to the fight against malaria? Where do we stand in the global fight?
So, yes, a lot of progress has been made, but there is still more work to be done. And there is an alertness about the additional work because it will, what we've seen, despite the fact that more lives have been saved, the number of cases has plateaued in the last couple of years. So people are still getting affected. We're doing a good job saving the lives, meaning getting treatment out there. But in terms of driving down all the numbers of cases and eventually getting to the ultimate goal of a malaria-free world, we still have quite a bit of work to do. So maybe to put this into perspective globally about where the progress where we can see potentially malaria elimination on the horizon versus what we see in Africa that is that carries the highest burden of cases. For example, Malaria Zero, the malaria elimination project that is focused on Hispaniola, so Haiti and the Dominican Republic, we have in 2018 a little under 10,000 cases. In 2017, that island, both countries, reported a total of close to 20,000 cases, right? Mm-hmm. So, and basically almost zero deaths. So the prospect of elimination can be seen in places around the globe that are a little bit further along on the spectrum of getting to elimination. So one of the important things about Hispaniola that I want to mention is that it's the last endemic island with malaria in the Caribbean. So once that island, Hispaniola, is free of malaria, we'll have a malaria-free zone across the Caribbean, and that would be a historic landmark for this region.
So what has been the secret then? What has been this success story? What has been the recipe, if you will?
So as many things are, it's multifactorial. So one of the things that that has given this region, the Americas and the Caribbean, a little bit of a head start was that, you know, malaria elimination and global eradication was on the radar back in the 50s and 60s. So many of the islands in the Caribbean were able to use chloroquine and DDT, for example, to eliminate malaria. However, we saw the risk of all of that failing because of drug and insecticide resistance. So now most of the other countries through different means, you know, insecticides and drugs that are now difficult to use, we're left with Hispaniola that still has malaria circulating. So one of the successes here is a multi-partner, multi-pronged approach, as well as a variety of partners. So you've got governmental agencies, but importantly, the Ministry of Health and the governments of the countries. U.S. government, for example, us working with them. You have other organizations like the UN Foundation. You have nonprofit organizations, implementing partners that all have to work together because it is a complicated disease transmission that we're trying to combat. And one of the, just maybe one last point about the technical aspect about what the success has been, is having good surveillance systems, being able to identify the remaining small pockets where malaria still is transmitting and being a risk to people.
And Ms. McDonald, when you work, when Nothing But Net works on the ground, evidently net distribution, I suppose, is able to reach the communities that are away from the main cities. Can you talk to us about the mechanism? I know that when I go back to Africa, whether it's in my country or other countries, in the major cities, you stay at the hotel or you go visit friends. They don't have mosquito nets. But then in the rural area, some places you will find mosquito nets, but not everywhere. So what is the distribution mechanism? And who, first of all, who needs to use the net? And how do you make sure that the people who need it have access to it?
Right. So thank you. So, well, as the listeners may know, you know, malaria is obviously caused by it's a mosquito bite and that carries a parasite. And falciparum is the most dominant strain in sub-Saharan Africa, where 90% of the burden of the disease is. And it bites at night, typically, you know, between dusk and dawn. And so it's really important to sleep under bed nets. You know, topography matters. So higher elevations are less vulnerable to mosquito breeding grounds. So, you know, there is a difference in topography. So sometimes urban settings don't have the same risk and vulnerability to the disease. But really, you know, the ultimate goal is for universal coverage so that every person, every family, every community has access. That said, there are, you know, limited resources. And so oftentimes the people that are most vulnerable, so pregnant women, and children under five have the most sort of compromised, vulnerable immune systems and therefore are often prioritized in some of the distribution programs and access. You know, the critical importance is access, I mean, as everyone knows, access to healthcare writ large, which is a challenge in many communities and countries. And so what we tend to do is invest in the deployment of community health workers. So ensuring, you know, frontline health workers being able to reach people who are living in remote rural communities that don't live close to a hospital or a clinic. And so we're actually doing that in the case, a couple cases. In Malawi, for example, we've been partnering with the Elizabeth Taylor AIDS Foundation and helping to deploy their mobile health clinics to reach people who are vulnerable for HIV and malaria, and actually helping to provide, despite our name Nothing But Nets, we actually provide more than nets. And so in that case, we were helping to fund the deployment of rapid diagnostic tests and treatment. Also in the case of Haiti, we're helping to support the work and the partnership of Malaria Zero. And so we're actually going to be working to support the deployment of community health workers to ensure that they are reaching the most vulnerable and remote regions within Grandans and other provinces in Haiti to help them achieve the malaria elimination efforts there. So that's just an example of how, you know, how we operate.
And are the nets distributed free of charge?
Yes. Yes, they are. There have been studies done that we did not commission, but other partners did, that essentially demonstrated that it's far better not to charge, that the best chance of getting to ensuring that everyone has access is to provide it largely free of charge. And, you know, these are administered oftentimes in, for pregnant women as part of their prenatal and their antenatal visits. That are bed nets are provided in conjunction with immunizations, regular, you know, the childhood immunization visits that are done at the different month marks. So it's all very, you know, a coordinated effort there, and they are free of charge.
Okay, great. Well, Dr. Cheng and Ms. McDonald, we will continue our discussion. We have to take a short break, and to you listeners, when we come back, we'll have more on malaria. Don't go away.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, let's be upfront.
There's a lot to talk about.
We need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
Upfront is a show where we look at issues that affect Africa's youth.
Giving you an opportunity to express yourself as you connect with other youth around the continent.
In this interconnected world, we share a destiny. So let us share our solutions to issues like unemployment,
education reform,
elections,
free speech,
and many others.
Nothing is off the table.
Nothing is off the table.
Absolutely nothing is off the table.
It's Upfront, Wednesdays at 1730 UTC, Saturday at 1900 UTC,
and Sunday at 1930 UTC,
right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing malaria with my guests, Dr. Michelle Chang, Director of Malaria Zero and a medical epidemiologist for the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and Margaret Riley McDonald, the Executive Director of the United Nations Foundation's Nothing But Nets campaign. So, Dr. Chang, coming to you, the Sustainable Development Goal number 3, Target 3, speaks to ending the epidemics of AIDS, TB, and malaria, and neglected tropical diseases and other diseases as well. So when you look at where we are right now, and what is your assessment in terms of meeting the SDG 3, Target 3, by 2030?
So so 2030 is very close, as you know, and I think it'll be quite a challenge for sure. But I think, you know, that's not to say that incredible progress can't be made in the next 10, 11 years. So for sure, the investing as we have been, sustaining the investments in health systems, which all three disease programs rely on, is absolutely critical, right? And so, in terms of health delivery systems at the health facility, as well as, and you heard Margaret mention, the community agents and the mobile outreach staff that can go out into communities, into the remote areas, and deliver services that are not just for malaria, but for HIV and TB as well. So the investment, sustained investments in strengthening these systems, making sure that we can continue them over the next decade, is absolutely critical and will be, I think probably the main pillar to give us the best shot for, if not reaching the goal of ending the epidemics, to make a big dent in them.
Uh-huh. And Ms. McDonald, when we look at the bed nets, and they are treated with insecticide repellent, I suppose. So what the average lifespan of a treated net is said to be 3 to 5 years, and correct me if I'm wrong. What happens afterward? Is the net retreated, or do people have to get a new bed net?
Thank you. And would you mind if I briefly touched on the SDG piece, just because at the UN Foundation, we're very driven by sort of the achievement of the SDGs.
Absolutely.
And I think I just want to make a quick point, too, that while malaria most clearly, you know, fits within SDG 3 of good health and well-being for all, malaria obviously affects all things. So when children are sick from malaria, they can't go to school and receive education. Women and girls are often disproportionately affected because of sort of traditional gender roles and cultural norms. And so there is this integration, you know, across all of SDGs. There's also interlinkages between climate change and malaria, for example. So just to say that, you know, all these goals are very interconnected and certainly working aggressively to reach the goal of ending the epidemic. But I will say, this is a really exciting and critical period. So we've had this amazing progress over the last 10 or 15 years. But we have, you know, the last two WHO World Malaria Reports have indicated that while more countries than ever are closer to elimination, like in Haiti, which is super exciting, we also have some countries that are slipping behind or progress is stagnating. And those are countries that are most endemic, Nigeria, DRC, et cetera. Venezuela has seen tremendous spikes, for example. So we're at this critical period. But what's been exciting is that this, in some ways, has lit more of a fire under the malaria and global health community and the UN overall to think really creatively and strategically about what are the new tools and strategies and partnerships and synergies that we can build on to ensure that we're having, you know, the smartest, most targeted, customized approach based on the country and community's needs. And so there's some exciting evolution on that. For example, the Global Fund and the Gates Foundation and the President's Malaria Initiative are working on a partnership to better share data and surveillance, tracking systems, et cetera. Obviously, the work that Malaria Zero is doing in Haiti is really innovative in that way. So it's, you know, it's a daunting time, but it's also sort of an exciting time because we do believe that eventual eradication of this disease is possible. But in order to get there, we have to remain diligent on the control front and also ensuring that we're hitting all these critical country and regional milestones for elimination on the track to full eradication, and that we have the role of the private sector, which plays a really critical role in terms of developing new technologies. So insecticide resistance is a real challenge and one that many of our partners are working to address through the creation and deployment of second-generation bed nets to overcome insecticide resistance. So, again, it's, you know, a really an exciting time, one that brings new opportunities. And we're talking more and more about the need to step up the fight. Mm-hmm. So this year is the Global Fund 6 replenishment happening in October. And this is a really critical time as the Global Fund provides about 60% of malaria funding writ large. And so it's a call on all donors, you know, from the U.S., which continues to be a lead donor, all the way to, you know, other countries and endemic countries to also step up the fight if we're serious about ending the epidemics of HIV, malaria, and TB. So an exciting time.
Great. Thank you for your take on this. And Dr. Chang, how is the CDC working with countries, in Africa in particular, to combat malaria?
So CDC co-implements the U.S. President's Malaria Initiative in focus African countries, and Malawi, as you know, we talked about for the vaccine, is one of them, and it co-implements with USAID. So it's a full package program, meaning PMI supports the delivery of bed nets, invests in case management, so the procurement and delivery and training of health workers in order to test and treat for malaria. It invests in surveillance as well, and I mentioned the importance of developing your surveillance systems because as you decrease the number of cases in a country, decrease the number of cases of malaria, you'll be left with residual small pockets that you'll still need to identify in order to target those with additional interventions. Another intervention that PMI supports is indoor residual spraying. So spray insecticide on the inside of walls that prevents mosquitoes from transmitting disease. So CDC is very much involved in working in sub-Saharan Africa. And just also to mention that the countries that are also part of PMI are also in Southeast Asia as well. And for there, I just want to highlight one critical point, is that artemisinin resistance has started there, And so that is really a critical component of the work that we do, is to try to figure out strategies along with other partners in terms of containing that and making sure that that doesn't spread and threaten the most important treatment for malaria that we have across the globe.
Okay. So then what is recommended to people, for example, when they leave the United States going to tropical countries, malaria endemic countries? What is the what are the recommendations by the CDC for travelers, tourists?
So thank you for asking that question, because, you know, focusing on malaria overseas is one thing that we do. The other piece is definitely to protect Americans and the United States from importation of malaria, for one, and to protect our travelers from the U.S. going to other countries that still have malaria. So those recommendations, and I won't go through the specific ones, mm-hmm. but definitely because there are different drug resistance patterns in different areas and different types of mosquitoes and different types of malaria that are being transmitted that you'll have to be aware of. So I would recommend that you go to cdc.gov on the website and look for traveler's health and look at the country in which you will be traveling and look at those very specific recommendations. But essentially, if there's any place that still has malaria, you can take malaria prophylaxis, our website will tell you which drugs are still effective in those countries. And, of course, as a safety precaution, personal protection is always a good general advice, meaning, mosquito repellent, wearing, covering your skin, so long sleeve shirts and long pants in order to prevent yourself from being bitten. And so that's just general good personal practices that anybody can follow.
And the U.S. was able to get rid of malaria many, many years ago. What lessons can malaria endemic countries learn from the U.S. model back then, when there were not tools such as vaccine, for example?
Right. I think that's a really great question. So the U.S. U.S. got rid of malaria by 1951, and we did this in the southern part of the United States. We did this mainly because the training for soldiers for World War II, they were getting malaria in the southern part of the U.S., and that's really actually the way that CDC was started, was that we started as a way to eradicate malaria within the United States. So what the U.S. did was we sprayed a lot of DDT, millions of homes, essentially. We drained swamps, so got rid of the breeding sites where where mosquitoes could breed and could continue to transmit. And we had good testing and treatment and surveillance systems. So our infrastructure and those key strategies really helped us get rid of malaria. So those are still basically the same principles.
Okay.
One of the major differences, though, is that, for example, I mentioned that DDT developed resistance. That was actually one of our best insecticides that we have had. It's that we no longer can use. Other ones
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm going to let you finish your
thought. Thank you.
Yes. So we're going to wrap in a few seconds. And Ms. McDonald, could you give us your final thoughts on the general fight against malaria?
Absolutely. Well, like I mentioned, I think we're at a really exciting juncture, and this is not the time to take our foot off the gas pedal. This is the time to drive harder and faster than ever before, and we really need to step up the fight if we're going to end this disease. And so we'd certainly welcome any of the viewers to check out our work, consider joining us, being an advocate, being a donor, et cetera, to help us reach the finish line.
Okay.
You can check us out at www.nothingbutnets.net, and thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Ms. McDonald. Dr. Michelle Chung, thank you so much for joining us. And I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington. Thanks to all of you listeners. Until next time, take care, be well, strive to make every day a healthy day. And thanks to our engineer, Al, and Bonsa Tufa.
DOA News.